Welcome to another episode of Out of the Blank Podcast. Mr. Hill, it is a pleasure to have you on the show. I'm excited today, and I think you probably heard from the episode with Cecil that I was excited to talk with you because, man, I got it. Just please introduce yourself to everyone out there listening.
I'm Stephen Hill. I'm from Southwest Arkansas. Been here all of my life. About 50 miles or roughly 50 miles or so from Falk, Arkansas, which is arguably the second most famous Bigfoot in the world. Right behind the Patterson-Gimlin film. So, I mean, with me, I've always had a curiosity of things that are odd, things that are not supposed to exist. It's early on, it was probably the Loch Ness Monster. And you would always see some things from the Pacific Northwest about this Bigfoot or Sasquatch, whatever people were more comfortable calling it. And it was that. So Chupacabra, everything like that. But it wasn't until around 2008 that my daughter had a sighting, and then I had one in 2009, and that kind of set me on this path that I'm on now, where Bigfoot is more of a hobby to me than it ever has been before.
Could you explain a little bit about what, like, if you were going to explain to someone what, who or what Bigfoot is, and then also, like, when you're researching, like, how do you go about researching? How do you go about uncovering new information? Because it's always been an interest for me, but like I said, I don't know if it's because it's just hard to contact some people in the Bigfoot community or if it's just something, but it's never been something that's stuck with me, or it's been something that's been ease of access. And I'm sure there's a reason for that, too. There's probably a little bit of secret stuff that goes on, like the Kennedy stuff that way, too.
Yeah, it could be. For me, as far as trying to describe what they are, they're human-like, but they're definitely different from us. They seem, just to be honest about it, I mean, they seem to have some abilities that we simply do not have. And I have, when I began, I was kind of a skeptic, even after I'd seen one. I was a skeptic for years. You know, I would go back and forth with it as to, that had to be what I saw. And then I would be on the other side of the fence. It's like, no, that really can't be what that was, because I would find more evidence in the woods. I mean, I've being in rural America, I've hunted the majority of my life. You know, I've been in the woods for, I don't know how many thousands of hours I've spent in the woods, just to be honest. You know, hunting or squirrel hunting. Squirrel hunting used to be my favorite thing. And I would go back and forth. And for me, from the time that I'd seen that, I went back and forth a few years. And to bring up somebody else that's possibly controversial, she is for a lot of people, was Melba Ketchum. And I've never met Melba personally, but I know someone who is friends with her. And, you know, that stuff came out, and that kind of swayed me a little bit with the project that, she worked on, the DNA project. But for that, I mean, I had no way of contacting her. I had no way to prove or disprove whether or not she was right in what she did. So I just kind of went on. And I'd had other things that would happen, vocalizations, heavy footsteps, things like that. Then the Finding Bigfoot stuff show came out. And that opened me up a little bit more, you know, as to where I began attempting to do some calls and things like that. And it was in August of 2015, I quit doing calls. I had one answer me from way too close for my comfort. So I quit for 2 years. And it wasn't until September 2017 that I started doing that again, because I didn't have anyone to go out with. I really didn't know much about what I was doing or anything. And I figured if I'm going to be out here in the dark, I'm probably going to stop doing that. There was no doubt about it.
When was your first experience? Like, when was your first kind of like that kind of set you really on the path? Like, if you had like a story or a certain sighting, could you explain that to me just so I can? Because I like hearing that stuff. I mean, I live in a city, so like we talk about woods, man. I'm jealous of you.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a. Part of my, I guess if I'm going to call it success in this field, is the simple fact that I live in flyover country. And there's not a whole lot of things to do around here. You know, it's if you want to have a hobby, you know, softball was my hobby for decades. And then I got too old to do that anymore. So, But it was in 2015 whenever I had a call returned to me when I did the call. And that really spooked me. So I quit doing calls for a couple of years. And then in 2017, I had a second sighting. And the second sighting, that's the one that's, I could no longer ignore this anymore. I mean, I went, I don't know, I was in 100%. That was the year I went to my first conference and I met some other people because I'd just been driving my wife crazy with this stuff. And she was happy for me to go talk to other people who had seen things or might have had a picture or something like that. They knew and they understood what I was talking about with some of the experiences that I've had. One of the things that happened was the heaviest footsteps I've ever heard in my life was actually when I lived in town, which is a small town, less than 1,000 people. And I'd gone outside there one night to being a country boy, and instead of wasting water in a toilet, you'll go outside a lot. And I was hearing real heavy footsteps. These footsteps were, imagine about a 1,500-pound cow walking upright and how loud the steps would be if they were doing that on crunchy leaves. That's what these footsteps were. And for whatever reason, I still don't know why I did it, but I grunted at whatever I was hearing on the creek. It was just a, I did that. And the footsteps stopped. No more footsteps. And so that right there really, really got me going. And also at that place where I'd heard the longest howl I've ever heard in my life. I've never heard another one that matched it. And I believe what set it off was a chicken litter truck that had, instead of having duals on the back of the truck, they had the really wide tires with the deep lugs on it. And you could hear it howling coming down the highway before it ever got to my house. And when it went by, you could hear it even after it went by. And that set off some coyotes. But in amongst the coyotes' vocals, there was this howl that just went on for over 20 seconds. It was... To say it was impressive was a real understatement. Like I said, I've never heard another one that matched it. And so I went to the conference that year in Honubby, Oklahoma, which isn't that far away. And I finally reconnected with a friend that I became friends with in 1988, a guy named William Lunsford. He does have a book out now. And we became friends in 88. He was a little bit older than I was. He started a family, him and his wife, they had a child. And our lives basically just went different directions, you know. No, we didn't have a falling out over anything. It just different directions. And I finally reconnected with him in 2018. And he really taught me a lot about tree structures and things like that. And, you know, you meet other people and you find out. One of the things that I found out during that time around 2018 to 2019 is I learned a lot more about the markers and things that are out there in the woods. I don't know, you've probably heard of tree bows and X's and things like that, mm-hmm. which is, okay, well, this is something that they do. And so I got to...
I've heard of stacking rocks, I think, about certain things like that could be a sign.
Right. Yeah, stacking rocks, tree bows. A tree bow, most of the time if I consider it to be them, it will be a tree that's bowed down. There usually be a dead piece of hardwood holding the top down on the ground will be what that is. And then as you go on, what I discovered for myself, or confirmed for myself, was that if you will continue walking, most of the time within about 25 to 100 yards, you'll normally find something else. It may or may not be another tree bow. It could be a limb that's been broken off with a Y, and that Y may be 8 to 10 feet up in the air, or it could be leaned up against a tree, just different things. And a lot of times with that, what you'll find, it'll be a big boy trail is what a lot of people refer to it as, where you can walk down that trail and you're not going to get cut up with briars. You're not going to get tangled up in vines. It'll be something that you can walk fairly easy on. And you'll find these other markers. You may find trees that are coming from each side, bowed over, and it'll make kind of like a tunnel or something. But it's really fascinating. If you get on those, a lot of times you can find impressions in the leaves of tracks.
What do you think the purpose is for all that?
That's been the curiosity to me. It definitely means something to them, and they're not all the same. Sometimes you'll find some things where you may find a tree that's bowed over, and it'll have some other sticks that have been broken off and stuck up underneath that bow, and they're broken off at the exact length to fit perfectly underneath a tree bow. And I mean, there's different designs. Sometimes with these, we believe that with some of them, you know, we believe that it's the same creature making the tree manipulations because of how they're made and how they're put together. But it's, that's some of the stuff that you find. And I mean, there are other people, you know, who are, I'm 100% convinced they know far more than I do about that. You know, they've been doing it longer as far as going out in the field.
What about the, I guess, perception that we all have this perception inside, and I think a fascination with it. It's why there's a lot of shows about it, but Bigfoot, but everyone thinks of it as like one, not necessarily a whole species or a whole different group and organization, a bunch of them. Like you've mentioned them a couple of times. And I think when did that thought process start coming in when people sort of realized that there's obviously so many sightings all in different varying locations that it couldn't just be one? There has to be way more than just one. And now we get to whichever number, I don't know what it's been in the ballpark of it now, but there's still a large amount of us in like that just, if they've heard about Bigfoot, it's just the one. And it usually goes back to the footage that everyone has seen.
Right. Yeah. It always goes back to the Patterson Gimlin. You know, that's the only one that they really had really is arguably still some of the best evidence out there. I've seen some other videos, and I've seen thermal videos. I've seen some other clips of them that are really good. The bad thing about it was probably recorded on a cell phone, so it's not quite as clear as the film, you know, that Roger Patterson recorded with. So, but now I've seen a lot of really, really compelling footage and pictures and things like that. So, from different states: Missouri, Oklahoma, Texas, Arkansas, Montana, Oregon. It's all over the country from where I've seen things from. And that's the really interesting thing. You know, the thing that people want to argue, put up with an argument against these tree manipulations is that, well, you didn't see a Bigfoot do it. True, I didn't see a Bigfoot do it. But I know where I find the stuff that I find. It's not off of a state park marked trail. Where I'm going, people don't go in there unless they have to go in there. You know, if a deer runs off and runs down in that area, then they might go in, enter into that area where I'm finding the things. But I will say this. I know a couple of guys who this probably happened over a decade ago. They were going to a new deer lease, and they had received the wrong directions. So they wound up on a spot that wasn't actually their deer lease, and they were walking through it. As they got to a kind of place that opened up with some hardwoods in it, they saw a tree spring up and just go to shaking like that right there. And they thought, what in the world? And the one guy, he told his buddy there, he said, trees just sometimes do that. He's like, no, trees don't just do that. You know, he was trying to, which is the thing, which is pretty common. People are going to try to rationalize whatever they see in the woods as something that they know instead of, you know, this is Bigfoot, which is pretty common. So the one guy, I know both these guys, and the one guy, he kind of skipped around a little bit closer to where he could see a little bit better. And when he got to where he kind of see where the tree was, he saw something somewhere between 4 and 5 feet tall that was black in color, take off running on 2 feet. So that's kind of confirmation to me that, yeah, this is not kids out in the woods, Boy Scouts out in the woods who are doing this stuff. So, and I know someone else who has seen some things real similar to that as well.
Why do you think people try and rationalize or try and if they see something, like if they're out in the woods? I think if you ask anybody, they'll either have a paranormal experience or they'll have something that they just go, well, I don't know what it was, but I do have this weird thing. And then they mention something that goes into like a paranormal thing, a UFO thing, or some type of creature or something. And I found that with everyone so far, even some of the biggest people in the skeptic society spend so many times trying to debunk things, but they just rationalize something in their head as it being like, well, my brain was doing this and there's actually a term for it and this. And I'm like, I don't know. It seems like you're doing more mental gymnastics to make it work, yes. You know?
Right. Yeah. I think we're so conditioned to making sure everything fits in a nice, neat little box that anything that doesn't fit in that, we have to rationalize it in some way that makes sense with something common. You know, I went back and forth as on that first sighting that I had, whether or not was this a bear. But the way that it moved, it didn't move like a bear. It didn't have a snout on its face like a bear. It didn't have a tail. It was the speed of it was the thing that really set it apart from being a bear for me. It's fast. I mean, I've never seen anything that fast in the woods. It's just absolutely doesn't make sense as to how fast and how smooth it was.
Did you feel threatened at all? Like, did you feel scared?
No, I was in a vehicle. I was in a truck, and I come down a real steep hill, had a sharp right hand turn, and I could see something moving through the woods, on the south side of the road. And at that time, the woods were open enough that you could see something moving through the woods, and I never seen it slow down. By the time it crossed the road, I was within 80 yards, possibly 100 yards of it. Probably 80 is probably more accurate because I got a good look at it. It never looked toward me. And I was thinking whenever I got up there to it, whenever it went up the hill on the other side of the road, that I'll stop and I will look up there and I will know for sure what I saw. But by the time I got there to it, it was gone. There wasn't anything to see. And I know bears can move fast, and I've seen bears run. And with a bear, it has the up and down motion. They've got some weight on them. They got fat flopping around everywhere. This thing was not like that at all.
Could you maybe explain some kind of myths and then what's actual realism? Like if you're going to look at it from like a investigative standpoint or from a hunter standpoint for someone who might be interested, like for the first time wanting to go on an investigation, because I'm sure I have some things in my head that probably aren't accurate and probably more come from some type of Hollywood version of, I like to think of Strange Wilderness when they find Bigfoot finally and they shoot him with AKs and like, you shot Bigfoot.
Well, there are reports of that taking place too, where there are some kill teams that will take care of some that go to causing too much trouble. I've talked to a few people who have told me stories about that. With my thought process on Bigfoot, Sasquatch, it's probably changed. I'm probably more open-minded about it now than I used to be. I was thinking it was probably North America's Great Ape is what I was thinking. And since then, they can solve problems. They can communicate with each other. And I have friends now who will tell me that they can communicate with them telepathically, I guess would probably be the best way to describe that.
No wonder he stays away from us. Holy crap. You're thinking if he can look inside our heads. Oh, no wonder he stays away.
Yeah, it's weird. It's I have a friend named Robin, and she's been able to communicate with him all her life, I guess. She's what is commonly called, you know, is mind speak. And for a long time, I was that was taboo to bring that up among the Bigfoot researchers. It's kind of like, no, you're this, that's not Bigfoot. Bigfoot is just flesh and blood only. Well, I believe they're flesh and blood, but at the same time, I'm no longer going to dismiss anyone who tells me the other things and how they have the ability to cloak. They can operate at a different vibration than what we do. And I guess here's a part that I've always been more in the flesh and blood camp, but at the same time, as I told you, I'm not going to dismiss those who tell me things different. And I'll go ahead and say this and just throw it out there now. There are some people that I talk to, that I know, people that I trust, will tell me, you know, we're kind of in a three dimension, maybe, to me, I like to say probably three and a half dimensions is what we exist in, you know, height, depth, length, or width, whatever there, and plus time. But for us, time is basically a half dimension for us, because until somebody proves it different, I believe that we can only move forward in time. So for me, it's we operate in three and a half dimensions is my view on it. And I could be proven wrong. It may just be made fun of for that view, but that's my view right now anyway. It may change. But it's been explained to me, you know, that the Bigfoot, they actually operate in five dimensions, which allows them to do the different things that they do, you know. Because I've had a lot of people tell me, you know, they've seen the Bigfoot, and then the Bigfoot would just simply disappear. I remember for a long time, I would hear those stories, and I think, I just don't know about that. But what I've done in the past few years, I've talked to people, and I've had some experiences that were, I don't know, they might fit into the paranormal world better than, they certainly fit in the paranormal world better than the flesh and blood world. It's I've been in the woods before at night, you know, trying to do an investigation of Bigfoot, and the lights will go out. Audio recorder stops at the same time. And you end up having to walk out of the woods in the dark because your lights don't work. Then you can move a half a mile down the road. And for whatever reason, the light works again. The audio recorder works again. And this is stuff that I simply cannot explain. I don't know how that works. It's pretty wild to think about. Probably one of the things that it kind of troubled me, but at the same time, it was in an area where the lights had gone out and the audio recorder quit working, is I was with some other researchers. This would have been in the Mena, Arkansas area, is where this was at, in the Ouachita, what we call the Ouachita Mountains. Here in Arkansas, when you cross the Oklahoma line, they turn into the Kamishi Mountains, but it's the same ridge, same mountain range. And we were on we were standing around on a low water bridge, which is just a little concrete slab at the creek where water could flow over it. And we could hear something running through the woods. And the woods were not, you could kind of see into the woods just a little bit when you turned your light on. We were out there with no lights on, standing in the dark. And we could hear this, we could hear something running toward the road, loud. I was expecting it to either be a really big hog, a bear, or something. But when it got to the edge of the road, I turned my flashlight on, which was 1250 lumens, which is a really bright light. When I turned the light on, there was nothing there. We all three of us heard it, and there was nothing there. And I don't know how to explain that unless somehow they have the ability to cloak or they can do something else like that. I mean, I'm limited on what box I can actually put that in, other than just this happened and I don't know what to do with it, you know?
Well, how can you go and be able to measure, be able to test out any of these things? Because you can't really plan when they, if they do bother to show themselves, or if they, you do happen to catch a glimpse of anything, whether it's a sound, whether it's a roar, whether you can't, you know, you can't create that. We don't have the tools to be able to do that. But how would you even go about? I mean, would it be just teams sending a team out into the, just like a young college group out there, like a horror movie, and just hope to God that, you know, one of them comes back alive to be able to tell you? Like, that's the thing for me. It's like, I want to, like, the paranormal stuff. You can go to a haunted house and be like, let's set up equipment and let's get everything set. Where can you set in a forest? I mean, you don't know exactly where. You can find some markers maybe, but who's to say that they're even around that area?
Yeah. They move around. I mean, they're not going to stay in one place for too long. It's a, you know, with that, and that's the thing that makes this really, really difficult, is you can't show receipts on that. I mean, a lot of times if you get a picture, you can show people the picture, which I have pictures, and people can look at them. I mean, if they can see what I see in the picture, that's great. If they can't see what's in the picture that I see, not a problem. I'm not trying to make converts into this. So it's, you can either see it or you don't see it, and either way I'm good with it. You know, it's, I'm not gonna lie to you. I'm gonna tell you what I think I see in the picture, or what I was looking at the time when I took the picture. But yeah, but that thing that I experienced there, I've talked to people in Texas. The guy that I know from Texas, he experienced that with another guy, and the one guy, he's definitely from a flesh and blood camp, you know, but they experienced this very similar thing, you know, something running through the woods when it should have hit the road. They didn't see anything. That was happened to researchers in Ohio. They were camping. They were sleeping on the ground, I believe, and they could hear this thing coming towards them. Got his thermal up. Couldn't see anything. Lit it up. Couldn't see anything. That's the thing that we can't show receipts for. I mean, in order for you to have any kind of documentation of that, you would have to have the audio recorders going to prove that you were hearing what you were hearing. And then the other part, I mean, it would still be up to everybody else. You know, did they stage it? Did they fake that? And trying to bring about real hardcore proof is difficult, you know, because there are people. You know, it's just like with the Melba Ketchum, you know, in the study that she did, you know, she had DNA samples that were submitted to her from all over the country, from the East Coast to the West Coast, as far as I know. And with what she came out with, I mean, she was ridiculed to the point that she wished that she had never gotten involved at all with it. And that's something I didn't fully understand, is why people would get onto her in such a way, you know, the way that they did.
But do you believe it comes with a stigma, though? Like, I like to think I think from what I've heard from Michael Cook, he explained that a lot of this Bigfoot stuff gets diminished because there is a cover-up aspect that does come up with it. And I don't know if you believe the government or if you believe anything like that that happens to do with more secret aspects of things, but for the longest time they denied Area 51's existence, and well, it turned out to exist. And the longest time they denied UFO's existence, even caused people to get to the point where they killed themselves. The Robertson panel is a famous example of research scientists that were listed and labeled conspiracy nuts and tinfoil hat wearers because they were part of an organization that was researching UFOs back in like the 80s. But now they're coming out and saying that UAPs exist, UFOs exist. Where I'm like, I don't believe it. Now I just don't know. I had all this belief and then it all just went out the window once you guys said it. But the government definitely has incentive. Agencies like the Smithsonian, me and Cecil have gone into a little bit. There's a large amount of trying to hide certain things about history. And that is well known. Even if it's 20 years ago, 30 years ago, the story changed. Now, if you talk about a species, I mean, When you go to a convention, you probably come across a wide array of people you never would have thought of would be researching this. Anthropologists. Some of the people I've seen speak about this, right? Well, this guy's not a quack. He's a researcher that's showing you that I have this mold of something and this is a print. So if someone can explain what animal has this, then I'll just give up on my work. And I'm like, well, no one's explaining to them that it's not real. They just don't know how to explain it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I have a, they're up here on the shelf somewhere. I have a, have a couple of cast here that I've cast. One of them is almost 15 inches long. My daughter actually found it. I don't remember how wide it is. 6 or 7 inches wide at the ball of the foot, something like that. You know, most humans, it's about four inches wide at the ball of the foot.
You got Shaquille O'Neal over there.
Yeah. Yeah. And, but I have some friends of mine from Texas. They have a 20-inch cast, which is it's huge. When you see that in real life, it's absolutely wild to imagine that something that big is actually moving around in the woods. And that's the thing that was another thing that always troubled me was, how can I see something like the second one I saw? It would have been at least 8 feet tall, 4.5 feet across the shoulders, that wide, and it squatted down whenever I spotted it. It was absolutely huge, and that was the argument that immediately went into my mind was, how can something that big hide? You know, and even bigger than that, because I know other people who've seen these creatures that are 10 feet, and when you get north, some of them tell you that they get bigger than that, 12 feet plus. So it's, I don't know how they can successfully hide, you know, it's one thing, but I do know that if you're in a rural area, and if you get into an area and you're really quiet, you can hear a vehicle driving down the road a mile or 2 miles away. So, I mean, you're not coming in as quiet and discreet as what you think you are whenever you're driving down a gravel road. You know, that's part of it. The other thing would be, you know, if you go into an area and you camp in an area and you're staying quiet, that would change things up a little bit. But for William and I, we have an area that we call Ground Zero, and that's where we've had most of the pictures that we have come out of that area. You know, that's where we, the dog man photo. Before we ever saw the dog man, though, we found the trackways a couple of times. The first time, for whatever reason, I didn't video it, or I didn't take pictures of it or anything else. But the second time I did take a picture. And, you know, a dog that's supposed to be able to walk upright and run upright, that's really not supposed to be something that happens, you know. But if you go back and you look at a St. Christopher or Anubis and some of the other things, you know, the dog-headed people, there's real documentation about those in history. You know, with a Bigfoot, it seems like they do have some human DNA to them. But like I said, when I was trying to explain it earlier, there's something different about them. You know, they have some abilities that we don't have. You know, that's when people get into different things. You know, we talked about the UFOs just a little bit. I don't know for sure that I've seen UFOs. I've got a little short video that I recorded in December 2021. I had another one at one time from around 2013. Where there was just a light in the sky that stayed stationary. It was changing like 4 or 5 different colors. It would, but that was on the cell phone. And whenever I don't even know where that phone's at now, but when I did go back and try to look up the video, I couldn't even pull the video up on it anymore. Cell phones, that's what they're notorious for, is when they crash, they crash. But, you know, how can we say for sure, you know, what this is? And for me, I believe that there have to be other dimensions that exist, you know, other than what we have access to.
Did the Did the conferences that you went to confirm anything for you and your belief in it, just amongst all the researchers that had these wide-ranging backgrounds to see that it wasn't just a couple people on the internet, it was a large amount of people with like even PhDs. You don't have to have a PhD to be a researcher, but there were people that were actually coming with their own experiences that either were similar or they might be completely different, but overall you guys still had the same impact and feeling from it.
Right. Yeah. That was really comforting, you know, to have somebody else who understood the experiences that you've had with this, because just the hard truth is most people in America, they don't buy into this. For them, it's not real. It's some kind of a urban legend or some kind of myth that people think is real. The other thing is, you know, Ron Moorhead. He's a guy who recorded him and another man, they recorded the Sierra sounds back in the 70s. And Ron Moorhead, his latest book, you know, The Quantum Bigfoot, you know, he goes into a lot of that stuff. And I won't pretend to understand quantum theory or anything like that. Oh, what was the guy's name? He taught at Caltech, I think. And he said quantum theory was for people with a really specialized education, and it was good for small children. Those were basically the only two that could understand it. The rest of us have been so conditioned for normal life that it's hard to grasp. So, but Ron Moorhead, he does that. He'd be a really good one. I mean, he's never backed down from what he believes. You know, he's talked about a lot of that stuff where, you know, you can hear all these different sounds, which is pretty common, you know, for people to hear. They hear metal out in the woods. They'll hear a car door shut, things like that. Things that shouldn't exist, or things that you shouldn't hear whenever you're out in the field, but sometimes you do. So, you know, the quantum theory, quantum mechanics, you know, maybe that is the key to fully understanding this mystery.
What did you think, and I'm sure this is multifactorial, but why do you think so many people just don't have an interest unless it's on like X-Files or the TV? You think it's because we're obviously isolated? A lot of people are when we're in cities and stuff like that. But also, does the movies and the TV shows really ruin the actual reality of this as well too? I feel like that, since it's like a pop culture trend, it can be taken really Hollywooded up, and it can kind of get people to lose interest, or it just becomes this thing that's like someone brings it up, they just scoff and walk away, which I don't necessarily think that they should be doing that. But that's also with any, you talk about JFK, I mean, Oliver Stone always gets mentioned when you mention that subject and people scoff at it. You're like, oh my God, please don't do that. But it's just when something becomes Hollywooded up, if they can find a way, like Skinwalker Ranch became that. And my buddy runs that show, TJ, he produces it and everything. And he's came on here and openly said, no, I don't believe in any of this stuff. And I'm like, ah, that's good. Well, I'm glad you're giving me your honest take, but how much of your show is faked for views? And he's like, eh, we do what we can to get that second season. I'm like, all right, dude, come on. Like, that's what I'm saying. I was like, if there is this real thing that you're coming across, how much of the show or how much of however that's out there in popular culture about a similar subject takes it out to the extreme and really ruins our perceptions of it as people?
Yeah, that's part of the reason I have I really don't watch Bigfoot movies. I just don't, because I don't want to be influenced by something that's been staged or whatever. I want my experiences to be something legitimate, if that's a honest way of saying it. And I know some people who've some guys, and they had a show. And the thing that they'll tell you is that the producers, they want to sell the sizzle to make sure they get the second season or whatever. And they want to stage this and that and everything else. I've met at least three different groups of people who've told me very similar things. I know one man, I knew a man from Ohio. Him and his family, they'd already signed a contract to do a paranormal ghost show. And whenever the producers came in and said, you're going to do this, 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 and this, they were like, uh-uh, there's no way. What we do is legitimate. And so they basically what happened was his daughter, she told her, don't worry, Dad, said, I'm going to get us out of this. And she behaved in such she behaved in such an unfriendly way that they went ahead and let him out of the contract. But that's but that was the thing. That was the experience that they had with it. And they thought they were going to be able to go ahead and do what they did and bring the evidence forth. And the producers, they had a completely different mindset about it. So, and the bad thing is the people who do sign up for that, they have legitimate evidence. You know, it's just like they have legitimate Bigfoot evidence. The other people, they were going to have legitimate Bigfoot evidence, audio, cast, different things like that. But with the producers, you know, trying to make it for TV, it just went against what they believed in. So
you mentioned kill teams.
Yeah.
I want to ask about that. I have to. I mean, it's okay if you want to get graphic about it. I just won't put it on YouTube. But
well, from what I've been told, a couple different people have told me about the kill teams. One of the kill teams was it took place in Texas. They brought out a kill team because I think it was a couple people been killed. By Bigfoot, or they believed it was Bigfoot, and they brought the kill team in, and they killed an adult and a juvenile in that one. There was a guy from Oklahoma told me about that one. Then the other one was in Tennessee, where they were having a problem at one of Tennessee. I think it was a state park. I'm not sure if it's state or federal park. But they were having a problem with them. You know, they were coming in, slapping dumpsters, running through the camping area, stirring up things. And they brought a group from the military for a training exercise, I believe. And next thing you know, they didn't have a problem with something running through the camp area, slapping dumpsters anymore. So that was a couple of different stories. I've been told.
So are they violent?
Most of the time, no. For me, I've never had just a real scary encounter, which is a lot of people have. For me, I never have. I mean, I've been really close to them and I've been scared, but I think most of the time the fear was just my own fear because I was so close to them. And I didn't realize I was as close to him as what I was at the time. I just knew that my skin was crawling and I had chill bumps all over. And I finally turned on the light, and lo and behold, that's, you know, I had one. I did that one night. I was with the Ground Zero area that William and I have done most of our research in. We were putting out treats for them, and we had game cameras set up to try to capture pictures. And that's what it was. I got there one night. It was already dark when I got there. I had a flashlight that was about equal to a cell phone light. It was actually designed for a mechanic and on the vehicle. And that's how that was. As soon as I got out of the truck that night, I had chill bumps. And when I got out there to the spot where I was going to put the treats out, that overwhelming feeling that I had just wouldn't go away. And I turned that light on and I could see one. It was, if you were on a two-lane highway with a small shoulder on each side, if you were on one side of the highway, it would have been on the other side of the highway. That's how close we were. And I got spooked. I left one treat. I don't know if I opened the other second one or not, or just dropped it on the ground. And I left. I couldn't have it anymore, man. That was just too much for me. And it took me, I don't know, it probably took me an hour and a half to finally calm down that night. But I mean, it didn't growl at me. It didn't show its teeth or anything else, but it was just more than what I could handle at the time.
Has local news ever reported on it where you're at or any other locations compared to the mainstream? Like what the mainstream, I don't think it's ever possibly ever been reported by the mainstream unless they're talking about maybe a show or something. But I'm wondering if the local news really kind of tries to highlight some of these stories. Because I've seen that with like JFK stuff. Certain researchers will get highlighted by their local newspaper, but you'll never see that local newspaper unless they're sending you a copy.
Right. Well, from where I live, our local news comes out of Shreveport, Louisiana. And they cover Southwest Arkansas and East Texas. And what would happen, I remember this when I was a kid. It was, you could be watching the news. Sometimes it might make, it seems like most of the time it was probably on the 10 o'clock news, the second airing of the news in the evening time. Where somebody would see something crossing Highway 71 around Falk, and they would send a reporter out to, I think at that time, maybe they would probably send somebody from Texarkana out to interview the person who had witnessed the Falk monster running across the highway. And they did that a few times, and most of the time you could tell that the reporter wasn't all that enthused about being given that assignment, because somebody had seen the Falk monster. But yeah, they would cover it. And it was kind of interesting. I remember one guy in particular, I don't recall his name, but his eyes were still big whenever the news reporter was there interviewing him over that. He talked about what he had seen crossing Highway 71, which there have been quite a few highway sightings south of Falk, in between Falk and Doddridge, over the years. And there was somebody, I forget which band they were in, but they had done a show in Shreveport. They were traveling through Highway 71, back through Texarkana, going somewhere else. And they'd actually had a sighting. I remember hearing that on the Coast to Coast years ago. But yeah, that was kind of the interview, you know, that you get. But in Falk, Denny Roberts, he has the monster mark. And there's some of the original cast from I think from the 60s, whenever the Falk monster became so it blew up, you know, it kind of went nationwide there for a while. Then you had the Legend of Boggy Creek. It came out later, you know, the film. But that's kind of the attention that it's received around here in this area. For that, as far as the interviews, you know, Bobby Ford, he fought off the monster there, which was north of Falk in what was it, the early 70s, I think. I could send you the newspaper clipping of that, or I could send you a picture of that newspaper clipping.
Why do you think there hasn't been like an actual like government investigation or media investigation or actual full on group team effort of like months and months of actual like full-on dedicated resources to really trying to cover and talk about and at least openly explain? Because if you Google Bigfoot conferences, you will find them. So it's not like this is just up some people on the internet like a lot of people might perceive. Like there's a large amount of people that are doing research and advocates and really trying to spread the word out there, but we don't see any of those stories getting highlighted. Like I've seen furry conventions on the media. I don't know why the media is not talking about Bigfoot at least. You know what I mean? Like there's a real disregard from it. And I noticed it through like doing the Kennedy work. There's not anything unless it's an anniversary, but everyone has seen, as much as everyone's seen the Zapruder film, everyone's seen the iconic footage of this ape-like creature walking. And whether people say it's a suit, whether it's whatever, I don't know what your opinion is on it. It's done more culturally than anything to really highlight the message, which I think is important because we all have a belief in something. And surprisingly, it's just not, since it's not on the TV, there's not a large focus on it.
Right. It's for part of that, I think that probably goes against the agenda. You know, something like that is not supposed to exist. You know, with what we've been taught in school, public school for decades, is that we're getting bigger, smarter, and whatever else they want to throw in with it. And something like that from the past is no longer exists today. But the truth is that it does exist. As far as the Patterson-Gimlin film, and I'm 100% convinced that that's legitimate. That's a legitimate footage. Whenever you look over it, there have been people who have dedicated many years to going over every part of that footage. And whenever it's slowed down and it's put into a loop, you can see each glute on the Patty subject moving. Her thumb is actually doing this on her left hand. She's spinning her thumb around whenever she looks back. Whether it's a torn muscle or whatever it is on her right thigh, you can see something on her right thigh. And the fact that she has breasts, you know, who would have had the thought to, hey, we're going to hoax a Bigfoot and it's going to be a female. I really don't think that would have been the mindset in 1967. So for me, it's legitimate because they also cast the tracks. There have been people, you know, I think that it was Bob Hieronymus. I think there's another guy named Bob who claimed that he was in the suit.
It's not Bobcat Goldthwait, is it?
No.
He's a Bigfoot guy too. You know that? Yeah, he's a Bigfoot guy.
But there was another guy, you know, he claimed that he was in a suit. Well, the other thing for me is not only can you see all the muscles moving underneath the hair, and the hair's thin. You can see where the hair is thin on her side, where her arm has been rubbing up against her, rubbing the hair off. But nobody has successfully debunked the Patterson-Gimlin footage in, what is it now, 50, however many years now. It's stood the test of time. So that those are the two reasons why I believe that it's a legitimate film, you know, as far as the subject in the film.
Has there ever been anything for you that you just couldn't agree with or understand when it came to Bigfoot research? Like you mentioned it evolving really kind of from the flesh and bones concept into something a little bit more, but is there something that you've heard that you just go, no, that's, it can't, no.
Years ago. Yeah. That's how it was, especially, you know, with the cloaking thing, you know, I remember that it was covered in Pennsylvania. They had I believe it was a UFO. They had quite a few sightings of UFOs in Pennsylvania. Was it late 60s or early 70s or something like that? And people talked about the Bigfoot that they were seeing. And there was one report of a woman, I think it was a woman, the Bigfoot had come to her porch and she shot at it with a shotgun. And before the bullet could reach it, it just disappeared in a flash of light. And I thought, I remember the first time I heard that, I thought, there's no way. I don't know what they saw. I don't think it was a Bigfoot thing. And I don't doubt those kind of reports anymore. It's because we simply don't know. There's nobody who's an expert in this. You know, I've covered the whole gambit, you know, of is it flesh and blood, or maybe the creatures are flesh and blood, but there's something spiritual that's causing all these other things to happen around them. You know, it's kind of make you wonder, you know, what exactly is going on. So
what do you think when you mean it, like it distorts our perception on things? Like if we talk about its effect on us, like, can it make us confused? Can it make us go into certain states that could be explained when, like, you hear a random story about a hiker out in the middle of the woods that gets disoriented or something like that? And I don't know if there's an explanation for that, because a lot of this stuff doesn't get explained. They're just like, you randomly got dizzy or you got lightheaded, and it was like, I mean, he hiked up half the goddamn mountain and
Yeah.
spent the night there. I'm like, he was fine. He was cooking marshmallows. How did he just randomly get disoriented? You know, you hear these random stories about like a kid in their 20s or something that just has something happen to him and they have to be airlifted or they're lucky to be found. And we found out they were actually dehydrated. I was like, dude, the guy goes to Harvard. Now, I'm not an idiot, but if he made it into Harvard, I think he knows to bring a little bit of water with him. You know what I mean? Like, there's something like that.
Yeah, well, there is something that they can do, and for the life of me, I can't comprehend how they do it. But the best way to explain it would be is they have the ability to produce infrasound, which infrasound, anything below 20 hertz falls out of the range of what humans can hear. Anything that drops below 10 or 12 hertz, that starts vibrating our insides, our heart, lungs, nerve. It's a real vibration that I've experienced before. But at the same time, there's a bass singer. I don't know if he still sings, and he used to sing at the Pierce Arrow Theater in Branson, Missouri, a guy named Tim Storms. He has the deepest voice in the world, and he can get two or three notes below what a piano can play, to give you an idea how deep he goes. And I remember being there around 2013 or 14, somewhere. We'd gone as a with a family, kind of a family trip over Thanksgiving to Branson, and we went to the theater. And I remember them telling us that Tim is now going to hit his lowest note. Said you won't be able to hear it, but you'll be able to feel it in your seats. And I was like, "Huh? What's he gonna do?" And sure enough, he hits his deep bass note, and you can feel the vibration in the seat. That's and a human can do that. So, but the thing about infrasound is, I know the French have experimented with infrasound, and other governments have experimented with infrasound. And every time they produce it, if they're trying to use it as something to get a calm a crowd down or get a crowd to disperse, the bad thing about the infrasound is that it gets everybody. Yeah, they don't have a way to control it. It just goes everywhere because it's the long notes or the long frequencies. It's really effective for elephants to use it in a forest, because it can travel through the thick foliage. But the Bigfoot, they can produce the infrasound as well. I experienced that one time in Oklahoma with another researcher, and that researcher had never seen a Bigfoot. So what I did is I turned around, I turned my back to it. We actually couldn't see it. But I turned my back to it, and I could feel a vibration that went from my hips to my shoulders. It was like being in front of a bass speaker with just a constant vibration. And that the vibration is what I felt. Now, the researcher beside me said that what they felt was a pressure on their chest. So two of us, we kind of had just a little different experience with it. But it's I know this has been tested in concerts where they have used infrasound at a concert, and then they interviewed after concerts, and some people had scary thoughts, some people experienced anxiety, some people felt a vibration. Not everybody experienced the same thing. With Kumbo, he talked about it and how he saw a fuzzy ball. I don't remember exactly what the test was. I think it was perhaps a government test of some kind where they were experimenting with the infrasound. And that was one of the things that people would see was a fuzzy ball. So yeah, and that's been thought, you know, maybe that's how they can escape. If somebody happens to be in an area where they're at, they want to escape, they hit them with infrasound, and it messes everything up for the human, and they're able to slip away. I
I'm
mean, if
slowly evolving past the flesh and bones thing. That's my thought of it too. But then once you kind of start explaining it, I go, okay, wait, I can actually get there because we do have technology for not they're psychological weapons, but Biden had made an apology statement because they use these types of things that how they disperse riots by emitting sound. It caused people to feel confused. It caused them to also get tired. But Biden had apologized in like 2022 or 2023 or something like that for some portion of the population was actually exposed to it during a certain incident that happened. And I had shared the article on air. It's funny, if you try and Google it now, you will not find it. You can find it on my episode though. So when I looked it up, it was there. But it would to me, it got me there. But the flesh and bone thing, like for the cloak thing, have you ever seen Lady in the Water?
No, I have not. I've seen a preview or whatever.
They talk about these monsters, and it's kind of based in like this folklore, old bedtime story. And these monsters are actually real, and they're coming. And this guy has to learn this story to be able to fight these monsters. But they talk about this giant dog beast thing that basically hides in the grass, and it can look like a bump in the grass. And then you see the grass, this tall grass, and this thing just rise out of it. And you're like, that thing just came out. Now it is a movie, but if you really look at like how it's like how I would think Bigfoot instead of a cloak thing. It's fur. I mean, sloths grow moss on their fur, and you can't see them at night if you're looking through trees. They blend in so good. So that's what I would think as cloaking. I don't know if they disappear, at least in my mind, yet, unless you have some information there. But it just, for me, it would be like their hair on their, I mean, their fur. I mean, maybe they blend in so good, and we know people can paint their skin to do the exact same thing with their environment, to where you can't even see them if they're right in front of you and they just disappear.
Right, and that's part of it with some of the hair samples that have been collected from the Bigfoot. It's not all black or brown or red hair. Some of it's translucent and it's hollow, which makes it more difficult to do DNA testing on it unless they actually have the hair follicle. They really can't do DNA testing on it. And the interesting thing about that with it being hollow is light could enter in one spot on the hair and come out in a different spot, which would be a really awesome camouflage. So
Now, how come we haven't found a body?
they've been found before.
Okay.
There was one from I cannot remember which hurricane it was that hit the Gulf Coast. But the head was removed from it, and the body itself was hauled to was supposedly making its way to the east. So
I mean, it brings me a little bit of comfort where I'm like, they haven't evolved past that yet to the point where they can survive a hurricane. We still deal with that. I was like, look, if they can survive that forever, I'm like, what are we doing of evolution-wise? Good God.
yeah, but that's one story. My friend William, he tells that one. I believe he has that one in his book about that. But I think that one's like 7 feet without the head on it. And yeah, but yeah, bodies have been found. Yeah, bodies have been found. I don't want to incriminate myself. I made a promise, but yeah, I've seen.
I
Bodies
won't
have been.
put I won't put you on the spot on that one, but there's have you ever heard of Humanese before?
Yeah, human knees. Was it a chimpanzee
It's
or?
a chimpanzee, and it like but it walk like it walks, it moves just like a human does. And it's like there was just 'cause this chimpanzee that was basically raised by like a family of actual humans, and it just started adopting features. And I was like, so it's not super impossible, like to get people to the level of like believing in something that could be similar to us in structure, but have just these distinct characteristic differences. I mean, what would we be like if we didn't build up cities and we didn't build up things that made us softer and isolated more? I mean, 200 years ago, we're completely unrecognizable body-wise.
Yeah, it's that's the amazing thing. Whenever you go back 200 years, you go to look at the clothing that people wore 200 years ago, and you think, man, this was this kid's clothing or what? And it's like, no, this was for an adult. Really? Because
The average weight for a woman was 165, and then the average weight for a male was 125. And I was like, our men are way past that. We got football players in the NFL that look like mountains of meat, basically. And that is supplements and stuff like that. But it's crazy to think that was only a couple hundred years ago.
Yeah. You know, I mean, just like you have Cecil, you know, he had him on. His show came out yesterday. And, you know, Cecil's a big dude. You know, he's 6'4" and three something, three and some change. That's a big man.
Yeah. He calls himself a teddy bear, though. He is sweet
yeah.
like one.
Oh, yeah. 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 And Tully. And Tully's also a big guy, too. You know, he's nearly 6'5". You know, he's another big fellow.
So, I'm sitting over here at a good 5'8". That's comforting.
Yeah.
Comforting.
Yeah. Yeah. They're both a little bit bigger than I am. So I figure I've got Tully beat on weight. But
now, with the Bigfoot, like, coast to coast. I mean, we mentioned it in the beginning. I told you I'm a big fan of Art Bell's show and everything like that. But I mean, was that like something that you would consider important just as like someone that might have listened to it at one point and then might have, you know, not stuck with it? But I think those types of shows are pretty important. Like Weird Realities is pretty important, highlighting a lot of this kind of esoteric, paranormal, all these different beliefs that we necessarily don't see on mainstream. Everything now is so political, which sucks. I'm in that realm right now, but it's interesting to get into. Like Coast to Coast was just such an inspiration, I think, if you really listen back to some of those. It's still going on. I just like the Art Bell stuff. But you know, being on the radio back then and being able to like have people listen to you in their car, whether they're going at like 1 o'clock in the morning to Joshua Tree to trip on acid or whatever, but you're hearing this dude interview people. And it's like, that's revolutionary for the time, especially back then.
Yeah. I think that's very important. You know, it's a, to me, the programming that we've all been subjected to, we actually need shows like the Coast to Coast or the Weird Realities or things like that. Your show, it's we need those things to expand our thinking, you know, so that we don't all fall into the, I guess, get the Borg tap thought. You know, if you ever watch Star Trek and the Borg, you know, they were all exactly the same pretty much. And we need these kind of shows to break the mold, to allow people to think. You know, it's a, if you look at it, you had to have critical thinkers throughout history for the world to develop like it is today, you know, for the inventions to come forth to make life easier and all that. If everybody had the same mindset, the exact same thought, we probably wouldn't be where we are today. You know, whether everything is good or not, you know, that can be debated, but, the conveniences that we have, I'm glad to have them. You know, I like air conditioning, heating, and things like that.
Indoor plumbing's good, I could tell you that.
Yeah.
But do you find that people that really dismiss the subject of Bigfoot are mostly the people that just won't look or even bother to have the conversation about it? I've seen it with some skeptics. I just literally had a skeptic on, probably it's going to be the episode before you, but he did a book about the Nazi occult. And his whole thing was dismissing any of those ideas or theories, or he says it's, I'm like, but you know, there's so many things he said were double standards on so much stuff. Like he researches the occult as an academic, but then he started getting into modern politics and how the right wing was this. And I'm just like, hang on a second, like take me back to the actual like facts of the Nazis, you know, that'd be nice, you know, but they drift. And then he's like, yeah, the world's so filled with conspiracy theories. And I had to bring up the JFK one, you know, I had to throw that in there. I was like, what's your stance, bro? And he was like, I'm not going to lie to you, I do think that there's something strange there. I'm like, well, that's good. You're not completely out of the mix. But to me, it was just like, wouldn't you want to have the conversation? And he was like, but you're doing damaging work by doing that. And I was like, how? None of these people that I talk to about paranormal or anything have a danger bone in their body. They just want to talk about something that interests them. That's not dangerous, and that should be happening. But I find that these people don't take the time to go that far and really understand it as much.
Yeah, and that's the frustrating part. You know, is just give it a look. You know, to me, I consider myself a truth seeker. Whatever the truth is, whether it's good or bad or whatever, you know, I just want the truth. You know, I don't, wherever it falls is where it's going to fall. I'm not, you know, that's. Avoiding politics, that's something I started avoiding a long time ago. I don't know, it's nothing but a it's nothing but a frustration to me as far as the politics, because you either have to be on this side or you have to be on this side. You can't. But and that's the funny thing, you know, in our on the weird realities, you know, it's all of us don't have the same mindset on politics. We have our preferences, but we've never had we've personally never had angry word said toward anybody on the show, you know, as far as, that's where you're at, and that's fine. You know, I'm glad we're not all the same. Think, you know, if we were all the Borg, you know, just think how boring life would be.
I was going to say, it would be a boring world if we all agreed.
Yeah. If we all agreed on everything, it'd be a boring world. I mean, the fact that somebody disagrees with you on something right there, it gives you a chance to learn, in my view. So you can open your mind up a little bit more and see, try to understand where they're at. It's, you know, and who knows, maybe I'll change my mind on something someday. You know, I have on the Bigfoot subject. It's you know, I used to be pretty much flesh and blood, thinking that I was going to bring in evidence rather quickly once I got my mind on that to do it. And guess what? I don't have what I thought I would have by now. And part of it's my fault, because whenever those situations arise, for some reason, I don't know. I don't know if it's the adrenaline that kicks in and you're not able to focus the way that you should. Perhaps maybe it's the infrasound that will be the distraction that causes you not, instead of recording a video, you take a picture instead. I honestly regret doing that, especially with the dog man, because it was out in the field and I took pictures instead of taking video. And I wish that I had taken video. How cool would that be to have something like that on the video, where you could view it for 30 seconds or a minute or whatever, instead of looking at the few pictures I took.
But even then, would that be enough? With CGI and things now, people still won't believe it.
Yeah, it wouldn't be enough. You know, that's no, that wouldn't be enough. And like I said a while ago, you know, there have been bodies that have been found, but I mean, the people don't want to come forward with it, because whenever you come forward with that kind of information, it seems like nothing good ever really comes from it. You know, it's just like the people you were mentioning, you know, who did the UFO work, you know, and it got to the point with some people, they committed suicide because they were harassment or whatever the case was, you know, that drove people to that point. You know, just Melba Ketchum, mention her again. You know, I mean, she regretted that she ever got involved with it. So, and I don't know. It just like all the bones of the giants, you know, that have been dug up. Where did all those disappear to? You know, there have been some that have been dug up in pretty recent times, and they disappear. All those bones that disappeared off of Catalina Island, where did they go?
I didn't know a lot about this until I had a guy on my show named Christopher Pope. And he's actually probably one of my fastest returning guests, because something strange happened in our episode. If you watch, like I said, this is the first time I've ever met you. So I don't know what you look like before. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know anything about you before. We kind of learned it on air. And this guy came on, and he was like looking at me like this through the, you know, like through like one eye, basically. And I never brought it up because it's rude to do something like that. So I just, you know, after the episode got released, I told him, hey, man, I haven't heard from you in a week. I'm going to be posting up your episode. And he said, Robbie, the craziest thing happened to me. And he sends me an article of his local newspaper, and it says, man who's been blind for 40 years begins to see. So he had a firework blow off in his eye, but I can't tell because I'm looking at a dude who's, it happened when he was a kid. He's like 60 something now. And he literally shows me the newspaper, sends me the article and everything. He had mesh in his eye under here to support his eye being held up. It couldn't see out of it though. And that's why he was looking at me like this. He told me when I was talking to you, my eyesight started coming back. And he was like, it was crazy. I thought, I don't know what was happening, but he went to sleep. All the mesh, when they scanned it again, his face, all the mesh was gone. And Yeah, I had him on to talk about it. I was like, this is crazy, man. Tell me the story. He's like, yeah, man, this is insane timing. But when I was talking to you, vision came back. I was like, did you tell the newspapers that? He was like, no, I didn't say that. I was like, good. I don't want people coming to me thinking I'm Jesus or something. But one of the things he was on for was that he in the UK found these iron sites in the bogs that they have down there. And it shows that the Vikings, they just disappeared. But it shows that there's remnants of them to be able to trace. And we can actually find out that the Vikings didn't disappear that when history said they disappeared. It actually disappeared a little bit later because we have these remnants. And he was bringing it to his local museum down in the UK and bringing it to researchers, and they wouldn't talk about it. They wouldn't buy it. They wouldn't tell me. They said, "Take, get it, get out of here. We don't want it." And he's just an average guy like yourself. He's not, looking for selling a book. He didn't even want to do a podcast. He was just interested in looking at bog sites. He takes videos and stuff, and that's his little hobby. He does collects all these cool rocks. And the museum that he went to talk about this, they said because it would show that we have pagan roots. And that was the final say on that discussion. They were going to acknowledge something that could change history or just fix a certain part where we have no information on, but they didn't want to acknowledge it because it showed that they had pagan roots. So with that in mind, you start looking at the Smithsonian buying bones and covering that up, and you look at so much, you start understanding that everyone has a depiction of this is how we've always known it. So let's not mess with that. That messes with religious stuff, that messes with so much.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Yeah, and they did. Yeah, Europe. It definitely had a lot of pagan roots in it. No doubt. It's it's you can. I guess that can turn into a pretty good rabbit hole too. As far as that, as to where all that came from originally. But yeah, it wasn't until around 1000 AD. That the Vikings or the Scandinavians actually converted to Christianity. Prior to that, it was pagan roots, and most of Ireland, you had we discussed those kind of topics quite a bit with the pagan roots of the Celts and all the other people who settled the Isles. And with that, it's actually who came to America first. It certainly wasn't Christopher Columbus. I don't know how far you want to go into this, but yeah, I mean, all this stuff is just things that I find fascinating. There's pretty good evidence that the Vikings were here long before Columbus was. Not far from me in Oklahoma, the Heavener Rune Stone is there. It's a park now where it was had carvings on it. I think it was roughly translated to somebody named Glom, who claimed that whole valley in what was that, like 800 or something like that. So a long time before Tris sailed.
When you learn the suppressed information about history, I mean, are you shocked? Are you surprised? Or you start to understand of like, oh, it history was a pretty picture. It was the way you guys wanted us to know how this went because it sounds good on paper and it looks really good when you talk about the start of a country. I mean, nobody wants to talk about, oh, we met online. It's like, do you want to say that? Do you want to tell your kids you're at some park and you cross, your eyes cross from across the room or something like that? It has to be some pretty perfect story because everyone is ashamed of what really we got there. I think that's a big disservice.
It is. And to me, I don't remember who said it. If you don't learn your history, you're doomed to repeat it. I don't remember. I don't know who to give credit to on that, but I think there's a lot of truth in it. It's if our history's been erased, it's been covered up. The same tactics that were used before can be used again because people don't know. So as far as all that, it's yeah, but there were to me, whenever I see that, oh my goodness, the Kensington Runestone from was that Minnesota, I think. Scott Walter, he was the guy who said that that was a legitimate stone, Viking runestone. There's evidence all over the country. I don't know if anybody has ever satisfactory explained where all the missing copper disappeared from in the Great Lakes area. You know, it's I don't understand. It's just like with history, you know, they say that people couldn't make it from the other side of the world to the Americas because, you know, we had this huge ocean. Well, the water's always been a really great way to travel, a lot better than walking for thousands of years. So, you know, the Phoenicians, they traveled the oceans. The Carthaginians, they traveled the oceans. Then later on, the Greeks and the Romans, they did it as well. So, but the Phoenicians, you know, that goes back to, that would go back to like 1000 BC, whenever the Phoenicians were out traveling the waters. So, and they had some huge barges and they could carry a lot of people. So, and the fact that if you go back far enough, you listen to somebody like Randall Carlson, who's a guy that I really like. He'll tell you, you know, the oceans were 400 feet lower thousands of years ago than what they are now.
I had his friend George Howard on. If you ever listened to his Rogan appearance, he mentions George Howard so many times, Randall Carlson and Graham Hancock does, about the Younger Dryas impact hypothesis. Dude, that is like, okay, that there's a lot. Like this, I had this guy on my show like way, like I think the beginning of 1000 or something like that. But he he for 2 hours broke it down with slideshow pictures and things of that sort. I'm like, oh my God, like this is as fact-based as I think you can make it. Like you have everything documented, like every document, everything like this. And I'm like, it's surprising to me how much we'll just be like, yeah, but gas is $4. I'm like, hang on. This would solve a lot more than gas.
Yeah, a lot like the Wizard of Oz, you know, don't pay any attention to the guy behind the curtain. You know, ignore that. Just focus on what we're telling you to focus on. Don't look at it as how the world has changed, how people traveled back then. You know, it's I know Cecil and Tully, they get into the mud flood and Tartaria and all of that. You know, it's you can look at the 50-foot high ripples in the Scablands in Montana. You know that, that's a lot of water that did that. You know, so it's
I had to ban Cecil from talking about Tartaria on my show. It came up way too much, man. We'll be talking about like The Bachelor season 3. And he was like, yeah. And by the way, it's something similar to that in Tartaria. I'm like, nope, stop. We're talking about The Bachelor.
Yeah, there's evidence all over the world of all this stuff. You know, you had the polygonal structures and walls, things that are built. Then you had something that seemed to be from the perhaps a different time period, you know, where you have the huge stones and Baalbek, things like that. Stones that are so big, I don't know that we could move them today with the equipment that we have. And people back then were somehow moving these around. You know, to me, it always suggests that there was a lot of technology that existed that we're simply unaware of or we have amnesia of. So with that, you know, if to me, I'm not only trying to figure out what the whole truth is about Bigfoot, but I like all this other stuff as well. You know, I perhaps, you know, being one of the weird kids is probably where I fit in best. So.
I mean, you get a lot less fighting there with that group, but I like to think of it as alternate realities. Like when they talk about how the pyramids were built, when I mean alternate reality, I mean like, if whatever goes on in my state is a separate world compared to whatever goes on in your state. And over this time of 400 years ago, 500 years ago to 1000 years ago, it's basically another world. And at the time of that time period, there was all these individual bubbles, which were their own separate worlds as well too. What was going on in Greece was not happening in the United States, or not even the United States, whatever it was before that. There's so much that was different, and it feels like only thing that existed was where you were at because we didn't have the ways to communicate. Where I go, we had to have lost that. That had to be another timeline when those pyramids were built. Like it was just another distant time, another us that just either died off or went missing, whatever, changed over, and we lost the ability to be able to figure out how we did that in the first place.
Yeah, Robert Schock in the 90s, when Robert Schock came in and said that's water erosion on the Sphinx. You know, he wasn't met with great fanfare over doing that. And the fact that the Great Pyramid is 13 acres that's been leveled off. It's settled less than an inch in however many thousands of years it's been there. And the official storyline is that people went from gathering seeds to building a Great Pyramid in 30 years or something. I mean, the storyline just doesn't fit. There's no way that it fits. To me, I just cannot buy into that. There has to be, I don't know, there had to be some other technology of some kind. Maybe they use sound to levitate stones. And not only the Great Pyramids, you go to South America, you get in Chile, places like that, where they have all this stuff that's on top of the mountains that's built, where the air is so thin that the mules struggle to get up the mountain. How did they do that? You know, can they do it today? I seriously doubt it.
Man, if I could just get a stable internet connection, that would be fantastic. That's all I'm asking for. Everybody wants something like, I want to be able to do this and that. I was like, look, man, as long as my internet don't cut out when I'm watching season 3 of The Bachelor, we're good. You know, like, I don't care about anything else.
Yeah. and that right there is the programming that they want us all to fall into. Programming, you know, the program. When is the program going to be on TV? Well, a program, it's all right there, right in front of your face, if you're looking at it.
I'm telling you, it gets me hooked every time. It takes me about 10 minutes, and I'm sitting there watching, like, you know, a whole season. I'm like, damn, what did I do with my life today?
Yeah, I've done that. You know, you finally get onto something, you binge watch it, you know, you'll stay up all night. It's kind of, why did I do that? It's
educational purposes is what we call it.
Yeah. But yeah, all those mysteries there, you know, that's something that's always fascinated me, all of that stuff, the pyramids. And pyramids, you know, it's just like you have Stonehenge there in England. You have the Golan Heights in Israel. The Gilgal Rephaim is what it's called. It's basically, it's a hinge as well, just like Stonehenge. It's made a little bit differently, but it's the very similar design. The stones are just not lifted up in the air. Like that. Then you also have a Stonehenge. I think it's in New Hampshire, here in America. And whenever you line all that stuff up, I mean, it lines up. So it's yeah. However they were doing it, not only were they able to travel around the globe, but they were able to line things up through mathematics. So we're talking about some people that were very intelligent a long time ago. And it seems to me that we're going backwards.
That's very, very true. There's Plato's old writings actually described AI before we had the concept of what AI was. I mean, he had a more belief of it being magically answered and things of that sort, but there was a concept and belief of like being able to float and being able to have these ideas of what we would call modern day air travel. And it's surprising to think that one person could be writing that down at such a point, which, I mean, it only leads to my little theory that I just joke about, which is that imagine someone tells you, especially back then, if they told you you're a philosopher or you're just a kid that has this ingenuitive thinking, and from the young age of, like, let's say 6, you're being told that every word you speak is like a prophecy. That's going to curb your intelligence to the point where you're going to start reaching out for farther and stronger ideas. And that's going to create these kind of myths, but also this, you know, could make you feel like you're a genius. Like, you ever see Always Sunny in Philadelphia where they give Charlie sugar pills and he thinks he's taking a brain pill? He starts walking with a cane and he's describing philosophy when just the other day he was beating rats to death with a stick with a nail with it. So it's like, you get this like different warped perception where I go, what have we said to kids in society today? They have anxiety disorders, that they need help, they need to take medication. We haven't told them that they're strong and they'll get through things. We tell them that they need something to help them get through it. So it's not a crazy predicament to look at what we're in today and be like, well, what have we done to boost up people's confidences besides something that boosts up their confidence for them?
Yeah, you're right. Things in my lifetime, I used to be amazed at how I had an uncle, he lived to be 90, 92 or 93 years old, born in 1901. I thought about all the changes that he had seen in his lifetime. And, you know, it's, I really hadn't given a whole lot of thought to all the changes that have taken place in my lifetime. Yeah, I was born in 71. And, you know, from when I was a kid, we had three channels, sometimes four if PBS would come in. You had to go outside and twist the antenna, things like that, to be able to watch TV or maybe hear the TV. If you could hear it, sometimes the volume would come in good and the picture would be really snowy.
Yes,
and now, snowy. Yeah. And now, you know, we're conducting an interview where we can see each other clearly and hear each other clearly in real time. And I never would have imagined that when I was a kid. You know, So with that, you know, it's like I say, you know, a lot of things are better, but the thing that concerns me is, are we really creating free thinkers today?
I hope so. I mean, I think it comes from independent sources and independent media, like your guys' show, teaching people about, like, I mean, it's a guilty pleasure of mine when I'm at work on my overnight shift. I like to tune in when you guys do it. But is there a place where people can find your links, Mr. Hill? You've given me enough of your time.
Yeah, I do have a Facebook page, just Stephen Hill. And I do have a YouTube channel with the same name. It's hard to find because I don't have any, I've got a few videos and stuff like that. Some of the stuff that I've recorded in the woods, most of that will be more tree structures and things like that. I think there might be a little bit of audio on it, but that's it. As far as the pictures and things like that, I'll show those things on shows or whatever, but I just don't throw it out there for the world to look at and criticize because it's not worth the argument to me.
I'm going to link Weird Realities in the description so people can be able to click on that as well too and see your guys'
show. Yeah. Yeah. Some of the stuff, I've showed it on there, you know, so it's somebody wants to see the Dogman picture or whatever. It's we showed that with Kimbo. Kimbo was on, I think, or maybe it was a show before, but it's some of that stuff. Yeah, it's there. Yeah. And there's some weird stuff that goes along with it, you know. So,
well, Mr. Hill, thank you again for giving me the time. And thanks, everybody, for listening to this episode of Out of the Blank. Stay tuned for next time.